Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for...
Jesus Christ, that was loud. Oh my gosh.
Yes, loud. I am yelling into the microphone because it's Sunday, January 2nd, 2011. New year, yay. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is the one complaining about the loudness. Hello, everyone.
Yes, that would be me. 2011.
Yep.
How the fuck did we make it this far? You know, I figured, you know, in the mid-80s, you'd figured that we'd probably all be dead from a global thermonuclear war.
But perhaps, I remember sitting on my back porch when I was like, I had to have been like 7 or 8 years old, trying to figure out how old I'd be in the year 2000. And it seemed so far away.
The year 2000?
Yeah, it's
yes.
2000. It seemed so far away, and I was going to be so freaking old, you know, in the year 2000.
Right.
You know, and now here we are, you know, 11 years later, and indeed, I am, you know, old. Well, not, you know, comparatively compared to, like, long-lived trees
and
such,
and,
but, you know.
And married.
Yes, indeed. For anyone who doesn't follow my blog, I went ahead and did that yesterday.
Yes, congratulations. Now let me ask a question. You mentioned in your blog that you had the legal marriage license already obtained at some earlier point. Am I correct?
Well, it is the way it works in Washington State. I don't know.
It's a license to marry. Oh, you got a license to marry. That's how it works over there?
Yeah, you get a license to marry, and then you have to do the thing, and then all the witnesses sign, and the minister and or judge signs, and then you're actually married. Now, we still have to, at this point, mail in the signed form to the state. And in a little while, we'll get back an official certificate or whatever. I mean, we have a temporary certificate. We'll get an official one back that, you know, whatever. But yes, the deed is done. As of yesterday, we've been together over 7 years. For most of that time, Brandy was actually still married to someone else. So we weren't able to get married. Got that finally taken
care
of. Yeah,
it was a little bit difficult.
Last August, that was finally taken care of. And it took us a little while to get our act together and get the forms filled out and stuff like that. And even then, when we initially filled out the forms, we accidentally put me in the wife section and Brandy in the husband section. But we got all that worked out. Anyway, so yes, that's taken care of. Next step for us is we'll be working on the legalities of me officially adopting Amy as well. So we'll probably do that sometime over the next year. So thank you for your congratulations.
So, you're welcome. You're welcome. I know that it'd been a long time coming. I mean, you certainly, look, I will say this, in your defense, you sent a very late invite for your wedding. Now, you actually did send out an invite for your wedding, whereas I didn't even do that. I mean, everybody after, I mean, I was like yesterday, oh yeah, you know, how was last week? Well, you know, I went to lunch, I got married, what? Oh yeah, yeah, so, you know, you were far more proactive than I was.
I 16 hours in advance sent out a notice that said, oh, by the way, we're getting married tomorrow. We'll stream it online if anyone cares.
I unfortunately, you know, the time, actually, I wanted to see it. I think you said the recording, so I will watch it. But I forgot about the time, and all of a sudden I realized it was past the time, so I didn't.
We had a few people watching, so it was okay. We had a number of people watching online, and then quite a few more people commenting later watching the replay. It was an interesting way to do it. We had decided we didn't want anything, you know, big and formal or whatever. So we grabbed a couple cousins of mine who happened to be in town, and just did what we had to do. So,
well, like I said, I happened to actually get married. I told nobody, even when I showed up at home and my mother like asked, like, what did you guys just do? Apparently my wife realized this. I didn't. My mom was very upset. My mom was like burst into tears, and I did not know this. Okay, you know, I didn't mean to do that, but I just wasn't really thinking that clearly that day. Anyway, my brain was a little bit like, you know, but
you were drunk, weren't you?
I did it.
You were drunk, weren't you?
No, I was sober. I was sober. I actually, for that event, I was sober. It probably would have helped to have been drunk. I will tell you this, but no, I was sober that day. So anyway.
Anyway,
all right.
Let's move on to the main event. As we mentioned last week, we're just going to do some predictions for 2011. We realized we said we would go back and look at the accuracy of our predictions from last year. I did not. It was kind of a busy week, but Yvonne actually went back and looked at last year's listened to like last year's shows around the new year.
Right.
And so before
I realized that we did not do any predictions.
Well, you know, you mentioned a few things we talked about. We did. So before
but we didn't have like a prediction segment.
No, we did not have a prediction segment. I think we thought about it and then just forgot. Anyway.
Right. Then we forgot about it.
Anyway, so I pulled out the email that Yvonne put together after having listened to some of those shows, and we'll talk about that real fast, and then we'll quickly flip into some predictions for this year. This will be a relatively short show, by the way, because I have to run and take my mom to the airport so that she can go home again. So Yvonne said, or do you want to read your own email? Do you have it up in front of you?
No. Go ahead. Okay. You've got it there. I don't have it handy right now. So
Yvonne said that he spent the afternoon listening to our shows from the end of last year. We did not go and make predictions for 2010. We did, however, talk about a few things that turned out to be quite accurate. For example, I said, I'm paraphrasing now. I, Sam, said if someone was going to make a successful tablet, it would be Apple. Yay!
Ding. Okay.
I also said that the tablet would be like a large iPhone and not a scaled down version of Mac OS X. Ding!
Very Yay. Correct.
Good job. Good job.
Yes.
We both agreed that the Nexus One unlocked phone without a carrier subsidy wouldn't fly. There we go. Ding
and
again.
We were right on.
And that
thing, again,
that
yes.
thing's gone, and the new one that...
And when I talked about it, I believe I also talked a little bit about how, you know, Google had just gone and very successfully launched these phones with a partner model. Why in the world would they try to undermine it with this thing? And lo and behold, what did was successful for Google over the whole year with the Android phone was the partner model.
Well, and
successful.
And they
year.
Did launch a new reference phone recently, but they did it as a partner phone with one of the carriers.
Yes.
That's
exactly right.
I mean, I think it would have been wonderful if Google had been able to succeed and sort of cut the carriers out of the loop, but that's a very hard road to go on right now. The carriers in the U.S. are just so entrenched, and they have enough power over this market that it's really difficult.
But it's not just that. There wasn't enough features on that phone to really differentiate it from the much cheaper partner phones. So therefore, it was like you were paying a lot more money and not really getting a lot more for it.
Right.
So that's why, you know, it just didn't – I didn't see how it could work. So
yeah. So anyway, moving on, Yvonne also spoke about low valuations on stocks and how people were overreacting and how they would bounce back. And I think the market has bounced back nicely. I know
it is at a 3-year high. It closed at the end of the year.
And, you know, I know, you know, personally, the investments I have the most in have done quite well. You know, you never know. We'll talk about predictions for the future shortly. But Yvonne sums it up by those are a few of the biggest things we were talking about at the end of the year, aside from terrorism, as we had that Christmas plot last year. Yvonne evaluates it that our technical punditry was quite good and economic prognostication was quite good as well. We're going to see if we can match it again. This time we will.
Yeah, now you see, of course, exactly because we did so well this year. I guarantee you that anything that we predict right now will just completely be a disaster. Okay, and none of it will come true.
None of it at all.
So therefore, I predict. I predict the complete economic depression.
Okay. So
the economy will completely collapse over the next 12 months, and we'll all be unemployed, out of jobs, and living in tents.
There you go. Okay, so more seriously, let's divide this into sections. Basically, the things we usually talk about on this show go into three broad categories: politics, tech, and the economy. And then every once in a while we talk about the weather or my wedding or something. But, you know, unless you have any predictions on those lines to give, Avon.
I don't know.
Anyway, nah. Moving on.
Okay.
Let's do politics first. So just generally anything in the realm of politics, any thoughts? We are talking about 2011.
Well, here.
I
will stick with what I talked about last week, which I started talking a little bit. I sense that given the political change that happened this year, combined with an improving economy, that Obama's approval ratings will actually probably significantly improve over 2011. Given the congressional setup and how it is, I think that you'll probably see something similar to what happened to Clinton after the first 2 years in office with the same side Congress. I think that they'll get a lot more done, and it'll probably wind up being that he'll get a lot more credit. Like, he got a lot more blame than for stuff that he probably should have gotten, so he'll probably get a lot more credit for things going well than he. They probably should, is typical.
I'm going to be boring here and agree with you. I think basically this kind of divided government is much more Obama's style. I think his entire personality and his entire campaign and everything else was built around the idea of trying to forge compromises and trying to get things done. Where you have to sort of get a little bit from each side and push things forward. And a lot of the folks, you know, on the left side of the spectrum are pretty unhappy about that. But fundamentally, that's who he is and that's what he does. And I think that this mode of politics where, you know, is much more up his alley. And I think he's also got a situation where, regardless of how the Republicans play it, I think it ends up in his advantage. If the Republicans decide to be completely obstructionist and allow absolutely nothing to happen ever, then
that will go very much in his favor.
That will go in his favor. He won't get much done except what he does outside of the legislative arena. And if that happens, I expect him to boost how much he's doing sort of through executive fiat. And he'll get criticism for that, but he'll still get some stuff done. And I think and that'll be a net positive for him. On the flip side, if the Republicans start cooperating on certain issues and he actually manages to push some things through in a bipartisan way, that's going to come to his credit too. And so right. I think, you know, the things are lining up in a direction that's going to be good for Obama and not that great for the Republicans. However, I will put, you know, the caveat on top of this. It all depends on the economy still. You know, if the economy continues a slow, gradual recovery like it has, or even if it accelerates and gets better faster, all of what I just said is true. If, and we'll get to economic predictions in a while, but if, on the other hand, something disastrous happens, we start diving into a double dip, things start getting worse again, all bets are off. Then you know, Obama's in trouble. So we'll see how that goes. But my prediction for now is that the environment that we have now with the Republicans in charge of the House will actually be advantageous to Obama, and he'll do well from it.
I'm with you on that. I think the one thing about the economy this year, in terms of how it will, you know, talking about how important that is in terms of presidential approval ratings, and historically it always has been, government approval ratings. I think that the one thing about, I predict that economically we will still. It will continue in a recovery mode, but this is still going to be a slow, grinding recovery.
Okay. Leave more details. We'll get to economy in a second. Come on.
Okay. All right. But I think that definitely that but politically the point is that the way the economy goes, the way that the political approval ratings will go, And, you know, the economy will continue to recover, I think. So, therefore, I think that the presidential approval and those guys are they're going to get a tailwind from that. So.
Okay. So, any other political predictions, either in terms of how Congress is doing or the people who are thinking about running for president or, you know, anything globally? I don't know.
Globally. Jeez. Nothing that I can think of right now. I mean, I know that there's been a lot of talk in Europe about the euro, but breaking up or staying together and the countries, the economic union. But I got to predict that they're still going to stick together because they're fucked. They can't, you know, they can't undo it. It's just too complicated.
Okay.
They can't undo it. So I predict they'll all stick together.
I'll do a couple on presidential hopefuls. Now, we won't start the campaign season, you know, quote unquote, in earnest until 2012, of course. But if any of you remember 2007, all of the Democrats and Republicans spent all year long, you know, tramping through Iowa and New Hampshire and you know, making their intentions clear, and you know, the ones who were going to be serious started spending more time, etc. So we're going to see a lot of that in 2011 on the Republican side, obviously. Here's a prediction. I don't think we'll see a serious challenger for Obama on the Democratic side, unless it's a disaster. On the Republican side, I guess here's my main one. I don't think Sarah Palin will run. I think she may. She will.
That's bold.
I know it's bold, and I know there's a chance I'm wrong. And here's where I think I'll be. If I'm wrong, here's how I think it's going to happen. First of all, she's clearly been making all kinds of motions like she's going to run, and I think she will continue to make motions that she's going to run up until the very last minute. She may even do some campaigning, you know, and do Iowa and New Hampshire. I don't know. But here's the thing. I think fundamentally she isn't interested in really being president. She is interested in sort of, you know, the money and the fame and the whatever, and she will do whatever she can to milk that the best she can. If she ends up determining that the best way to do that is to actually do a full-fledged run, she'll do a full-fledged run. Because I think, actually, she can do it fairly certain that she's not going to win.
And then, of course, you know, if she wins, she'll just resign after the first year, saying that, you know, the climate in Washington is too complicated, and give a long-winded 2-hour speech over Capitol Hill, which nobody will understand what the fuck she's talking about, and then just resign. And that's it.
But so my bold prediction, and I admit this could go either way, but I'm going to make a bold prediction, is that in the end, she will not run. However, she will spend most of the year acting like she's going to. And then in the end, she's going to decide not to run, and she's going to decide instead to, quote unquote, use her influence to, you know, influence the direction of the debate or something like that, and she's going to try to play kingmaker and throw her supporters in one direction or another.
I think that in reality, I mean, although, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if she chose to run anyway, I think that that probably makes more sense given her how she has behaved. I mean, you see all the shows and all the shit that she's been doing over the last year. I mean, it's all really a fucking money-making grab. I mean, seriously. I mean, what the fuck? She's got that stupid reality show on TV, and then the other thing, and then all this other shit. I mean, all she's done, you could see flat out, the reason she had to quit as governor is because it's the only way that she could make millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Otherwise, as governor, she couldn't do this. If she runs really a serious presidential campaign, she can't be doing any of this shit either.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, her negativity ratings are so high off the charts that, you know.
Yeah.
I think, right.
Yeah, so that's my call. We'll see what happens. Other folks, Newt Gingrich, I don't know. I've heard he's, quote unquote, more serious this time than previous times. But there have been rumors about him running, you know, every time since he was Speaker of the House, pretty much. You know, and he hasn't. Romney is sort of the natural next in line, and people say that the Republicans always sort of end up gravitating towards the next in line, and that would be Romney this time around. He may be there. He's still got the same problems he had last time, but I don't know. It's still all hazy. It's hard to predict this far out. We're 2 years from the actual election, but we will see some interesting stuff this year on that.
Bob Dole?
Yes, Bob Dole. yeah, I believe he's dead.
Is he?
Yes.
Did he pass away?
I believe he did, yes. You can check on that real quick.
Oh, God. Oh, gosh, I can't remember. Oh, my God. I like Bob Dole, so don't, you know, like...
Not that
I would vote for him, but I like them.
The last of the semi-reasonable Republicans. Foreign affairs. Since you sort of just made the Euro prediction, I'll take an off the wall prediction.
Bob Dole is not dead.
Bob Dole is not
all right,
dead.
Yeah,
okay, maybe he just looks.
No,
dead.
He is not dead. Okay.
Okay.
I was like pretty sure. I'm like, damn it, is he dead? I'm like, no, he's not dead.
Maybe I was thinking of Bob Hope.
Okay. Yeah, Bob Hope is dead, not Bob Dole.
Well, you know, they're all Bobs. Okay. My long shot foreign affairs prediction. France will declare war on the United Kingdom.
Over what? Let me ask.
Over Prince Charles's haircut.
Okay. Well, if that one comes through this year. Okay. So in the line of that, I predict that Spain will invade Portugal.
There you go.
They decided that, you know, that it's very not symmetrical to have the whole peninsula together, and they just, you know, they want to fix that on the map.
Okay, now here's a high risk one. Do we think, and then we'll move on to other topics. Do we think there are going to be any major international terrorism events, either domestically in the U.S. or internationally?
Oh, I'm sure there will. Oh, I'm sure there will be. Well, that one's not the high risk one. I'm sure there will be.
How about in the U.S.? Will we see any 9/11 scale events in the U.S. in 2011?
I don't think we will see, you know, 9/11, if we're honest, I don't think that they actually thought that they would be as successful as they were. In terms of the scale, I have to think that probably you're not going to see, I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if we'll see something at the scale of 9/11 again in our lifetimes. Let me be even more aggressive than that. Okay.
Okay.
So, I mean, we'll
see. I'm not going to predict one necessarily for 2011, we will see them again in our lifetimes.
Think about the scale. I mean, you know, somebody could go and hijack a plane right now and crash it. It's just, you know, and that's still not in the scale. I mean, you're talking about knocking down a couple of high-rise towers in middle Manhattan that were the icon of the city. I mean, I don't know, unless some guy goes and takes a fucking plane and crashes into the Eiffel Tower or something like this.
Or someone gets a nuke.
Or someone gets a mini nuke, you know, something and like goes and blows it up somewhere. I mean, that's about, and I happen to think that probably will not happen.
I would agree with you. It probably won't. I won't exclude the possibility. I will not be as aggressive as you. I'm not going to predict it for 2011, but we will see an event on that scale again in our lifetime. It's just inevitable, I think. And
it depends on what you consider scale. I mean, I think that maybe there'll be a large scale terrorist attempt, but I'm looking through. You know, I'm going back even, say, Munich, the Olympics thing, for example. I'm thinking about that. The plane hijacking, the Aquila Lauro hijacking in the 80s.
And these were all very small.
The TWA hijacking.
Yeah.
Right. Compare, you know, I'm looking through history. None of these were even remotely close to how, you know, how spectacularly huge September 11th was. So my thinking is that, you know, I don't know if we'll see another one of that scale.
I of course hope you are correct. Okay, we need to take a break, and we'll come back and do a little bit on tech, and then we'll finish up with the economy. We'll be right back. During the break,
I'm like, what am I? Are you on an airplane already?
Well, I know, like, okay.
So, oh, that's your flight alert thing on your phone that your mom's flight is about to leave or scheduled to leave.
Yes, you are.
That's
so
what that
correct.
Is. Yeah, I have.
It's yeah, flight
because
track.
I have.
Like ever since I got downstairs for the podcast here, like every few minutes this thing's gone off, and I'm like, what the hell is that? And of course,
you're
absolutely right. It is loud on my phone.
Yeah, there you go.
And I don't even know. And I just dismissed it without looking to see if it's like on time or delayed or whatever. Anyway.
Okay. Well, that's really useful.
Yeah, that's useful because I just said, oh, there's an alert. Okay. Oh, whoops. I should have read that. whatever. Okay. We're back. Let's talk about tech now. So in 2011, exciting developments for tech. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. Look, last year, actually, one thing that I didn't write down, we were talking about 3D TV last year. Okay?
Yes, we were.
We did talk about it, and what we did talk about was how this thing would really not be very successful, okay, until the damn glasses got to go, okay? Yeah. Because it's just utterly annoying. I wear glasses. How the fuck do we watch TV without glasses? So we talked about this last year. Now, I just read about a week or two ago that Toshiba did launch a TV model already for 3D without glasses.
Yeah.
Right. It's very expensive. It's very small. The angles have to be right in order for you to watch it, but the technology, you know, is there to make that happen. Okay? So I think that, you know, this year you will see the evolution of the 3D TV without the damn glasses. Because, you know, I know that's been an item that a lot of people have promoted for sale. I still have not met a single person that's bought one of these with the fucking glasses.
Yeah.
You know, or that uses it regularly with the damn glasses. I don't. I don't know if you do.
No.
But I sure as hell don't. And I haven't heard anybody with a strong purchase intention that they were really eager to buy. Oh yeah, I want to get the TV with the 3D.
Well,
not happening.
You know, there are a few things there. Like, let me go into
the glasses are expensive.
Let me go in the other direction with that. Like, I do not think 2011 will be a year for 3D TV. It might expand somewhat, but I'm just thinking about the movies for now.
I agree.
People are, you know, I've heard numerous people talking about the 3D movies that has been the big rage this last year, talking about how, okay, this is getting freaking annoying. You know, it doesn't really add all that much. you know, it's annoying to wear the glasses, yes, but, you know, even so, like, okay, a couple times, oh, okay, that looks cool. But a lot of the movies that have been made 3D have done crappy 3D. Even the ones that have done good 3D, it's like, it's like, it's a gimmick. And I think, and it sounds like people are getting a little tired of it. Now, I'm not saying that 3D is going to go away, but I think you're going to see it decline a little bit. And we're not going to move to the point where, you know, absolutely everything is in 3D, like even romantic comedies, you know, like, you know, right now, of course, it's like the action movies or the big kids movies or whatever. But like, you're not going to move towards an area where 3D is the standard for everything. And like for the television side, you're not going to go to, you know, at least not in the near future, certainly not 2011, probably not for a few years after that. You're not going to see your local news in 3D. You know,
why the hell do I want to watch local news on 3D? I mean, I don't know, unless they, what are they going to start doing to the local news? Live recreations of the shootings, covering on the news? Just, so all of a sudden you'll see the bullet coming at you or something? I don't know.
No, Yvonne, just think about the weather maps in 3D.
Okay? Oh, that would be interesting. Okay, I will give you that.
You know,
okay,
you could just see the commercials, you know, Channel 7 AccuStorm Center in 3D!
3D! Yes, you're right. Oh, God. Oh, for Christ's sake.
Personally, I hope 3D just dies. I'm not sure it's going to die, but it's, you know, look, I would be fully in favor of, like, a full-fledged holodeck, you know? That would be cool.
Okay, like, that would be cool, yes.
But this, I don't know. It's more annoying than it's valuable. I fully admit there are a few situations where it's been really cool. But, you know, anyway, I think this will...
Oh, but let me mention something about the 3D thing. I don't know if you saw that Nintendo had to issue a warning, okay, related to this handheld gaming console that they sell, which has 3D, that apparently children can't play with it because there's apparently some negative health effects from using the 3D thing. So look at that shit.
Yeah, you know, I think 3D is one of these things where it's the entertainment industry, and to some extent the consumer electronics industry, but really the entertainment industry, you know, grasping at straws again to try to give themselves something that is differentiable, that can make them more money again, that can stop their sort of the decline in certain areas. Now, having said that, the decline isn't as bad as some people think, but, you know, it's still, they're very worried, you know, the plethora of choices out there for people to get their entertainment, you know, is growing and growing and growing, and there are more and more ways to bypass their traditional model. It's harder and harder to stop piracy, you know, so they're trying everything they can, and, you know, this is part of that. In the end, I think it's just a gimmick. You know, in the end, like, for a movie, what matters, for a movie or a TV show or whatever, in the end, it's going to be about the storytelling, and do you make a compelling story? And, you know, I can watch, you know, an old thing in standard definition, black and white. And if it's a damn good story, I'm going to be entertained by it. I don't need, like, you know, the $1 billion special effects in 3D. You know, I mean, that can help in certain cases. I don't deny that. It's fun in certain types of movies, but I don't know. It's my prediction. Look, it will continue not to succeed.
It will continue not to succeed. Okay. All right. So we're good on that. Okay. Anything else?
In the tech world, you know, I will predict that, you know, Apple will continue their role for now. It's an easy prediction, but, you know, they're on a major role. They've had they occasionally have their duds, but, most of, you know, their big high profile things have gone well. The iPad 2 will be released sometime in the next few months. It will be a big success, just like the iPad 1. I'm not sure if they'll have the same, like, if you remember with the iPhone, the original iPhone sold well, but it was still a fairly niche product. When they released the iPhone 3G, all of a sudden it exploded. And when they released the App Store, all of a sudden it exploded. I'm not sure you'll see that same profile between the iPad and the iPad 2, but I expect you'll definitely see some increased adoption further. I mean, I know I'm waiting for the 2. You know, it'll be a little bit lighter, it'll be a little bit smaller, it'll be faster, it'll have the cameras for video chat and stuff. I'm sure they'll throw a couple other new things in at the same time. I still see, you know, long-term, probably not 2011. This kind of device, the iPad, the iPod Touch, these kinds of things are the kinds of devices that as the data services get better and better and, you know, things like Skype become more prevalent, you can see these bypassing the regular plain old phone service stuff. But because it's all, you know, still through the carriers to get the high-speed network, you know, in the end, you're still dealing with AT&T or whoever. So it'll be interesting to see what flies there. The other Apple thing, they're due to launch very soon. Is it even within the next week? The Mac App Store. Anyway.
Oh yes, that's right.
I think that will also be a success. It will completely change the way people get their apps on Macs, and you know, they're already imitators getting ready on the Microsoft side of things. It will not be as big a success as the apps on iPhones and iPads, because, you know, fundamentally less and less people are using their desktops or even their laptops for those sort of things, I guess. But it'll still be a big success. I don't think it'll be as big as the mobile platforms, but it'll still be big. And, you know, I was going to say, you know, people don't tend to get the little cheap one-off apps to just play with on their computers. But one of the reasons is there hasn't been a good way to get them. You know, now there will be.
That's right.
So there will probably be
a shareware site or something like that where, you know, it's not easy to find the apps and ranked. Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass, and nobody who's not a geek is going to even bother. You know, like, you know, my mom, you know, in the current world is not going to go on her own and install a new game on her computer. You know,
no.
You know, she likes Scrabble. She likes some card games. She plays some things. I set them all up for her on a computer. I bought them. I installed them with discs. I got them all set up for her. With something like an app store, she could be bored one day and a couple clicks later have a new game. Yeah, that is not something she would have done previously. It might be something that she does with a Mac app store. I don't know whether or not she will, but it's now a possibility. It was not before, realistically. So it'll be a success.
Now we'll talk a little bit about, you know, Google obviously they're coming out with a number of their own tablet devices of their own with the Android operating system on them. I mean, there's already the Galaxy tablet, which kind of sucks, but I'm sure I didn't like it, but seeing by the pipeline of the other devices that are coming out, they look a lot better than that one. What is your thought on, you know, how much does this tablet market really start supplanting the current notebook desktop market, and how much of a dent does it make in the sales of that? Because I actually think my the reason I'm asking you what your take is, because my thinking right now is that if this is the case, it may be that by the end of next year, sales of these kinds of devices will probably supplant and start like pushing down sales of these kind of mainstream devices that a lot of the computer makers make their most of their money, including Microsoft themselves. I think that this will start putting some pressure.
I'll tell you my thoughts. I'm not sure if it's this year, but certainly within the next few years.
24 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Next couple years. I think we're gonna get there, because here's the thing. First of all, there will always be sort of the geek set who needs it all, who's going to have a desktop, a laptop, and a tablet, and a smartphone. You know, there are people who are going to need all four of those. But, you know, for many people, what, you know, if you're mainly a consumer and you're, you know, doing a little bit of light email, you're looking at your Facebook, you're surfing the web a little bit, you're watching some movies, you know, you don't need a full laptop. You know, and if you've got something that's much lighter that you can carry around and, you know, you're not typing a lot, so you don't really need a keyboard, you know, these tablets are going to be great. You know,
and it has like 8 times the battery life. I mean, it's like,
yeah, you know. and that makes a huge freaking difference. You know, you can take the thing around for a day or two, depending on your usage patterns, without bothering to plug the thing in, you know, and
that's right.
You know, so I see the, I'm not sure exactly what the velocity will be, but as these things get more and more prominent, as more and more people see them, as you get more and more people exposed to them, I definitely see you're, and as the prices continue to come down, for that matter, I mean, you know, you're going to see more and more people picking these up. I mean, yeah, if these things get really, really cheap and they're really good, you know, yeah, people will do them. Now, you alluded to the a larger thing, which is iOS versus Android versus Chrome OS, whatever. On that, I think iOS will continue to have sort of the technical and thought lead on things. But I think you are going to see something where, you know, Android, in terms of sheer numbers, is going to, you know, be beating iOS. Yeah, over time, I think they're growing faster right now, but they're still smaller. I think they probably are going to catch up simply by the fact that, you know, they don't have as tight an exclusivity, and things are, you know, they're on all carriers, they're available in all kinds of different form factors and different price ranges, whereas Apple's range is much smaller and with a smaller, you know, set of options. I think Apple's still the high end, though. Now, of course, there are a lot of Android fans who would disagree with that, but I think, you know, Apple's still the thought leader here. Android is trying to differentiate, but also, you know, still following a bit.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things about Android that I found, you know, quite interesting. I was looking at a couple of weeks ago the fact that you know, developing for Android isn't as straightforward as it is for the iOS. I noticed that
you have to worry about all the different carrier variants and such.
And devices. And I'm like, you know, it came up that, you know, sometimes a guy who writes an app for Android has to write for all the different types and models of machines, really 4 different versions of the same app for it to work on all the different kinds of devices. So, yes, will there be, I mean, you know, because of the price point and because the makers need an OS to latch onto, and because Microsoft, their traditional purveyor of that OS, is not, you know, has not come up with something that really works for this kind of market.
I'll note our conversation was Apple and Google. Microsoft was not in the picture. I think they may try
it's
again,
not in
but
the picture
still
because
fail.
They haven't. I mean, geez, it's still to this date right now, and they still have not come up with a viable alternative. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And I mean, I don't understand why anybody in Redmond hasn't been shot already in the balls over the fact that they can't come up with a fucking viable alternative to this.
Yep.
So, you know.
Okay. Let's take another break, and then we'll have to really quickly do economy because I'm going to need to run to the airport. We'll be back after. This is your poem of the week. Enjoy your poem, and we'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
In the Story of My Eyes by Cindy Savitt. 1. In my house there are no beams. In my house there is no breath. In my house I find the oven, the knotted air, the dried hands. In my house I have no ribs, no palms, no weight of blood. Only walls, folding their corners into tears.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, here we are. Economy. Yvonne, you started to talk about this before. Basically, you think the slow recovery is going to continue, right? Do you want to elaborate?
I think, yeah, well, yeah, the slow recovery continues, and it's going to stay slow for, I think that there is still one big reason that it stays slow. The housing market, even though foreclosures have accelerated, a lot of people have been pushed out of their homes or whatever, still has a major overhang out there of people who are underwater under mortgages. These are people that are current, that own homes, but that because of drops in values of their homes, they are way underwater and they can't get out. And that's making people... The problem that I've seen that it's causing, it's reducing people's mobility for work, okay? I have had numerous interactions with many people who purchased homes for the last 5 years. You know, this is not a subprime, this is whatever. There's a person that put a down payment that could afford their home, goes into it, and the problem they've got right now is that, you know, maybe they want to change jobs and want to go whatever, but they're way underwater in their mortgage, and they're like, I can't move. I can't get out of this place. For me to get out of this place, I have to come up with all this money. Then I can't buy another house. I'm screwed.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that the federal government, even though this has been bantered, discussed, and how, I mean, in certain states, in the state of Florida right now, over 30% of people are underwater on their mortgages. I think it's 30 to 50%. And I'm like, there's a lot of states in a similar category. And unless the federal government comes up with a way of how to deal with this situation, I think that this is certainly putting a significant damper on the economy, because there are places with jobs that go banging, but people feel that they can't move for those jobs. It's like everybody's stuck in a quandary. It's like, you know, it's a no-win situation. You know, this is really reducing people's mobility, and it's reducing people's ability to get ahead economically. Because okay, so they decide to go and like, okay, I'll take a short sale. Okay, I'm done. They destroy their credit. They're screwed. They can't buy something else. They limit their ability to be able to borrow money on anything, even if it's a car, whatever, et cetera. So therefore, that also still hurts the economy, because these people are trying to get out of a bad situation, but yet there's no easy out. Okay, and I think that because of this overhang, if nothing is done with it, will the economy still recovering? Yes, but it will be slower, and it will continue to be slow as molasses until this overhang gets washed out.
And we're still a long way from recovering sort of the tops in terms of employment and everything else.
Oh my God! Yeah, we're not going to get to that in the next 2 years. There's no way. There is no way right now. That is not going to happen in the next 2 years. I see recovery. I see improvement, but I fail to see, you know, how it could, you know, in terms of employment, I don't think that we can get there in 2 years to create that many jobs. No way. In terms of stocks, I think that it's possible to get there, but, you know, difficult unless some of these things get cleared out in the economy. And the reason why stocks may go up higher than say what the economy does locally, it has more to do with the fact that, you know, our major companies are so exposed globally that they're a lot of the foreign economies, a lot, not, there are some that have the same problems like Spain, Ireland, and some of those, but some of the bigger, faster growing economies like India, China, Brazil, and some of those, they don't have that situation. So therefore, their economy is growing and they don't have this overhang. So therefore, that would lift the stocks of the companies that are invested there, like most of our large corporations in the U.S. But it's still that doesn't translate into so much into, you know, the U.S. economy really being super vibrant and being able to generate that many jobs. But even if the economy were to grow at 6% next year and the next year, there is no way to create that many jobs so quickly. No way. We lost so many so quickly that still people are gun shy about hiring, and they're just not going to go out there and just start hiring willy-nilly. If this happened before in the early 2000s after the tech recession, and I don't see how we're going to get into a super fast recovery anytime soon.
Okay, so let me just weigh in. I actually will fully admit to knowing absolutely nothing about this part. So just for the point of you know, creating a conflict and having something to see who is right at the end of the year, I will predict we actually do have a double dip, and the recession or the economy will slow and actually decline a bit during the year. It may not be a huge double dip, but we will have a double dip before it starts to recover again. And I am basing that on absolutely nothing other than wanting to say something different than what
other
God said.
Okay. I will tell you that the reason why your prediction is highly unlikely is because we just passed a huge stimulus. We cut the frickin' Social Security tax rate on people by 2 points on everybody. So people are going to spend more money next year.
Okay.
They will have pockets.
So I really got to go, but one more thing. And this kind of could have gone into politics section, but we'll put it in economy. Over the course of the next year, will we see any meaningful movement whatsoever to address the federal deficit?
I think that you'll see some movement by the end of the year, because the budget, because the actual budget debate for next fiscal year with the Republicans, on the other hand, is going to be very heated. And the Republicans themselves will have a lot of pressure from the constituents that put them in power, okay, to actually do something.
Okay, here's my prediction. So, you'll see some movement. You'll see some noise about it. You'll see people making a lot of noise about it. But in the end, anything that gets done will be insubstantial. So they'll do something that lets them say they did something, but it's not going to be something that actually meaningfully addresses the problem.
Well, it isn't going to address it in the first 12 months, that's for damn sure. So,
okay. Any other predictions on any other topics, Yvonne?
Fidel Castro will die this year.
Okay.
That one's got to come true at some point.
And given the changes recently, is that going to have any significant impact in what actually happens on the island of Cuba?
We'll invade Cuba within the next 12 months.
Oh, there you go.
We got all these soldiers coming back from Iraq anyway, so they're bored, whatever. We got to set up somewhere, so we got to set up. We'll send them to Cuba.
I say we take over Canada instead.
It's too cold. You want to send the, I mean, they were in Iraq all the time. You want to send them on a vacation, you can send them to Cuba, you know?
Okay. Let's see. I would have to think of anything else, so I won't, because thinking hurts my brain. So let's wrap it up. Thank you.
Mongolia will invade China? No? Okay. All right.
The Koreas.
The Koreas.
The guy in charge of North Korea will die, just like you did Castro. I'll do him. And
yes.
And he. And there will actually be, when the power change happens after he dies, there will actually be something substantive different in the new regime. It'll either be his son, and his son will decide that now's the time to make a change, or the rest of the people there will decide that his son isn't who they want, and there'll be a coup or something, and something will change. So we'll see.
Or his son... The son will commit suicide with 2 bullets to the head. Okay, perfect. All right, good.
Okay, we're done. And we will review 1 year from now. We will review this episode and see how we did. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. It has been another exciting Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, or your own predictions. You know, and we'll talk about them. And tell your friends to listen, and we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.